I feel like I have to apologize. I was giving Mike Boddicker hell in the commercial break. I feel like somehow I've tapped into my grandfather's spirit, and I was just giving you hell about the what happened in 76, 77, and 78.
Those damn Yankees.
Wild accusations.
Mm, yeah.
The 1980, it all paid off. Our old friend Jack Harry. Jake?
Wow.
Jake? You know what I'm going to tell you, right? Book Jack Harry.
Okay.
I would like to talk to Jack Harry. It's been a long time since I've heard from Jack. He tweeted. Jack Harry tweets, Mike. Why can't you tweet?
Mm-mm. Not going to happen.
Jack Harry tweeted this.
He's a lot younger than me.
During my career in KC, I covered 17 different Royals managers. This is Jack Harry speaking.
No way. Get lost.
Sad to hear today that Whitey Herzog died. He was my favorite. Always knew where you stood with the White Rat. Stern but fair. 77 team won 102 games, most ever. Just couldn't beat Yankees in playoffs. Whitey was 92. What a great tweet that sums it all up. He covered 17 managers. And that's saying something. That's, Whitey was his favorite.
Yeah.
And that was back in the day, and you could speak more to this than we can, where, you know, reporters would get in there and really get to know the manager.
Oh, yeah.
There'd be more access.
Yeah.
And there was, you know, when you covered the Royals, and you got to know the Royals, and you were around the Royals.
You weren't in a little room someplace with 50 other people. You might be at a bar someplace talking.
Right. Yeah. That's right. That's exactly. There you go. Yeah. You had far more access.
Oh, yes.
And built.
Yep. And a lot more honesty.
Right. Much different relationships.
Mm-hmm.
With the manager and the players. And so those are some powerful words from our old friend Jack Harry. That's awesome. I loved seeing that.
I love Jack.
That tweet. So do I. Jack's always been. We were blessed to have a couple of guys in sports in this town for so long. And
yeah.
Jack Harry and Frank Bull.
Frank. Yeah.
You know?
That's exactly. Forever. So, yep.
How do you feel about those two when you were playing?
Oh, I was fine. I had no problem with any.
He thought Frank Bull was a red ass, though. Like, oh, here comes this guy again.
Frank? Really?
was there anyone that you, in this town, that you're like,
No, I love Scoop. I loved all of them. They were all fair.
You ever throw anything in Scoop?
No.
Okay, never, you better not.
No.
You know.
No, there was, everybody was fair, and they were, I mean, it was great. Yeah. I mean.
You didn't like Ken Rosenthal and Tim Kirkjian, though, it sounds like.
Not in 88, I didn't, no. Uh-huh. I do like Timmy now. He came up, apologized for some of the stuff. And Rosenthal, no. Now, his bow tie, he can take it and go home.
You used to call them the Twin Towers.
Twin Towers, yeah. They were both about 3'6".
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm enamored right now with what Jake is looking at. Usually I make eye contact with him through the show, and you were mesmerized with what's on that computer screen.
No,
please share with the class. What's going on?
Nobody really needs to know.
See, but I thought you were, like, looking for something to play. I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to give him a spot here. He's going to play this. He's found something.
NBA betting.
No, there's
Jake has found something relevant.
There's with my Jack Harry drop.
Oh, okay.
So it cuts it off at the end. If you're
no way. Get lost.
You see what I mean, though? It's like when you're looking at that, he found something that we're talking about. Let me give him a spot here. It's about the timing.
Yeah.
All right. And then I, well, maybe not. I might have lost him.
It's not. Nothing.
Is he gambling? I don't know what's happening. Is he working on a parlay? Maybe that has nothing to do with it.
I have a little OCD. I probably got it from you that when something. Is
I don't
like
know. Is it, what do you think that is? Well, like a virus? You can't
guys,
touch me.
You guys related?
Osmosis.
So there's some pretty good Whitey Herzog quotes out there. And, you know, the book The White Rat was about Whitey and everything. There's some quotes from him in there, but I never got to cover him. When he managed with the Royals, that was...
Were you four?
It would be really weird if you did cover him when he was with the Royals.
Well, at all, but when he was with the Royals, I was 2, 3, 4 years old.
Yeah. So Mr. I don't really... Herzog, yeah.
So I don't really remember the team
that well.
Still
talks the same.
But everybody, like, getting... When I got to cover the Royals, when we had the Royals rights here... and doing, you know, traveling with the team and doing all the pre and post, I got to sit in the press box with guys like Bod and Freddie Patek and Alfred Morris and all those guys. Yeah. And a lot
love
of those guys
Alfred
that had played for them, they would tell a lot of stories about Whitey. He was, you can tell what kind of character somebody is because of how many stories they tell. And they always had funny stories to tell about him. And he seemed like a guy with a great sense of humor. And it seemed like the best baseball – well, one of his quotes when he was asked what it takes to be successful as a manager, he said, a sense of humor and a good bullpen. Which, by the way, how prescient was that for what the Royals – everybody's like, oh, the Royals reinvented the game in 2014 and 15 with that great bullpen. Mm-hmm. But he knew how important a bullpen was when he was managing. But he was known for saying harsh blank. You know, if somebody was bad, they were harsh blank. That was the way he pronounced
it. If you're going to be – that be do it quick,
do it fast.
Yeah.
Let's get this game over with. His four big rules were: be on time, bust your butt, play smart, and have some laughs while you're at it. And I think, Bod, you could speak
to this.
That's
exactly it.
You got to have. We were talking about the chemistry of the Royals team and why it's so important. I don't know how many thousands of hours baseball players spend with each other through the course of a season, but you're on planes together.
Months,
on your
months.
Off day, you're still traveling
yes.
together, right? Like, because your off day is usually a travel day.
Yep.
So you're
going out to eat after you get in. You fly. Yeah.
And then you're in the clubhouse at 3 o'clock. You're there till 11 o'clock at night. During the game, you're hanging out in the dugout. There's, you know, you're just together. And the vibe of the – it's either going to be a miserable experience.
You've got to have some fun. If you can't have fun, you'd go nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd go crazy.
And but he also was not like buddy-buddy with the players. One of his quotes was, I'm not buddy-buddy with the players. If they need a buddy, let them get a dog.
Yep.
The guys that played for him also talked about how much he loved to use the athleticism on the field. You know, speed. He talked about speed a lot, and those Royals teams were so fun to watch.
Yeah, and so were the Cardinals.
Those Cardinals teams could
fast.
Fly.
Yeah.
You know, Vince Coleman and Willie McGee. And athletes like Ozzie Smith. And to me, that's one of the things when we talk about the evolution of the game. I loved about those Royals teams, the back-to-back World Series teams of 14 and 15, there were athletes all over the place that could go get it defensively.
We were talking about Locane and Bray. One of the three best center fielders I've ever seen.
Who were the other two?
That I've seen in person?
Yeah, sure.
Paul Blair was phenomenal.
That's several Paul Blair cards that I kept.
Who's the other guy that used to just be? The guy with Cleveland. He was on track. Little left-hander, leadoff guy. My mind slipped.
Not Kenny Lofton.
No.
Was he Cleveland and Atlanta?
Yes.
Brett Butler.
Butler.
Mm. Boom.
Butler. Yeah, he could. He was always that first step. Well, you talked about the first step.
Yeah.
First step and direct route. Guys. You see these guys, they dive for balls, and you're going, okay, I play with this guy, and he never had to dive. Because his first step and direct route, he was underneath the ball. You didn't have to dive.
That was always my dad's argument about Amos Otis.
Locane was unbelievable. Lorenzo Cain was
the things that you didn't see always made him so good. You know, but if you watch it on TV, you know what I mean?
From an ex-player standpoint, ex-pitcher standpoint,
the first step,
whoa.
The route to the ball,
exactly.
Tracking the ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because some guys might take a terrible route or get a late jump, and then they make a dive and catch, and everybody talks about what a great play
stretch
it was.
Shot. Yeah, what a great play. No, he just got a bad read. Or they drift. They drift to the fence. Get to the fence. It's not that tough. Yeah.
My dad, what did you think of Amos Otis as a center? Because my dad always said he didn't get enough credit because while some guys would be crashing into the wall to catch it, he'd already be back and ready for it.
That's what Paul Blair was that way. It was like he played real shallow, and you're going, how did he get to the fence so fast?
I don't know if Amos Otis got enough credit for anything.
Yeah, A.O. was good.
How good he was.
A.O. was really good.
We had a dog named Otis when I was a kid because he was one of my dad's favorite.
Either that or the Andy Griffith show, one of the two.
That was another great memory if you went when Amos Otis was playing. A-O. A-O. They'd have the A and the O up on the scoreboard. But you don't like that?
Well, I was on a different team.
Well, still, Mike. You could have joined along.
Yeah.
You'd be so grumpy back there just because you're with another team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's. So again, rest in peace, Whitey Herzog.
Hey, yes, rest he in also, peace. The White Rat.
Right.
I don't know what you think of this. This was one of his quotes. If you don't have outstanding relief pitching, you might as well piss on the fire and call the dogs.
Yeah.
Look, man.
Whitey was a hunter. You got to understand, okay?
That probably all came from the 77 playoffs.
But, no.
Well, look.
Well, yeah. There you go.
Hey.
Yeah.
And the Royals bullpen hurt him in the 80 World Series, too. Look, we went through a stretch while I was on this show where the bullpens were absolutely devalued and undervalued. Mm-hmm. And he used to irritate the hell out of me. Because you could do whatever you want. You could have a fine starting rotation, great starting lineup. But if you have a bullpen that sucks, they can just set fire to the whole thing, and there's nothing you could do.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it's demoralizing. And
we saw it at the beginning of the year this year.
Right. It could just like...
Starters are doing great, and all of a sudden the bullpen gives it up, and you're going, whoa.
And it doesn't matter.
That crushes you.
Well, it doesn't matter how the moves you make or the matchups or whatever else. If your bullpen sucks, you're just not... You're not going to win consistently enough. And then... We saw what Greg Holland and Wade Davis and Kelvin Herrera and, you know, and hey, Hochaver.
You're never going to see a better bullpen, guys.
There were some, there were some other,
lights out.
Great bullpen arms. That bullpen, like you said, that's the greatest.
I've never seen, I don't think I'll ever see one that good.
That's the best bullpen I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And look, nothing against the Royals now or in the future, but I feel comfortable saying it's the best bullpen we'll ever see in Kansas City. Because it's one of the best bullpens we'll ever see in baseball.
Be hard to top.
Yep. Especially if you think about what they did in the postseason and how good they were in the postseason. Go back
all
again.
Year.
Look at Wade Davis's numbers in the postseason. Look at Kelvin Herrera's numbers in the postseason. Mm.
And then
unbelievable.
Yeah, and then if you go actually with the details of what they did, like Wade Davis, that rain delay, against the Blue Jays and coming
back
out.
The high-leverage situations that they had to be in.
Yeah.
You know? And so then the rest of the base, bullpen's really important. Hold on here, because, it's a copycat league. And now maybe it's overcorrected to where you're sick of it. Now it's like, hey, we can just get five innings out of our starter. Let's just go to our bullpen, which I know you don't
opener.
Like it. Right.
Yeah.
Well, you love the opener. I'm not going to bet on that.
I ain't even going to go there.
Right.
I think we are seeing this year, too, how important it can be to have a real rotation.
You think?
How good was Lugo the other night?
Oh, Lugo.
How much do you love watching Lugo?
I love watching Lugo.
He's your guy.
That man can pitch. Yeah. I mean, he's hitting all the quadrants. He's mixing it up.
Not striking enough guys out, though, do you think?
Beautiful.
Every time he pitches, if he could just get a couple more strikeouts, I'd like him.
Just look at his line. He had 5-7 the other day. That's good.
Okay, in a couple hours this afternoon, we're going to see Brady Singer. We've talked so much about Brady Singer over the years. Why is Brady Singer? We've discussed not having pressure on him, but physically, when you watch him on the mound, what's leading to Brady Singer's success so far this year?
Not having to be the number one. Just pitching.
Is the stuff any different?
His stuff
mentality.
Well, he always thought he had to throw a shutout every time he went out before, and. We've had several games where we've scored 10, 11 runs. I mean, that these guys can score a bunch of runs in a hurry. And just go out and pitch. Just try to keep a team, go 7, try to keep them within 2-3 runs, and you've done your job. That's all you have to do is do your job. Let the other starters do their job, and you compete. It gets to almost like a competition where, hey, I can do a little bit better than that. It's kind of fun. You pull for them, but hey, I'm going to show them what I can do.
Tell me what you think about this. This is for all you guys. We'll start with Mike and just get your thoughts about this. So I was talking to somebody that's around the team enough to know and has been around the team in the past years enough to know. And I heard this about the Chiefs, and it proved to be prophetic. It proved to be correct. After the Chiefs lost in the championship game to the Patriots, and they sent Bob Sutton packing, somebody with the Chiefs just mentioned to me, we got to go get some dogs on defense. We got to get some guys. We got to get some dudes, some dogs. And he's not just talking about talented players, but some
mindset,
some red asses, some guys with a chip on their shoulder.
Junkyard dogs.
Some a-holes. Yep. We got to get some dogs that are going to get in there and walk the walk, talk the talk, and have a mentality that's going to carry over to the rest of the team.
Yeah, you're going to see some penalties, but they're going to...
Essentially,
yeah.
We got to give this defense some balls,
mm-hmm.
okay? And you know the balls that they brought in? Frank Clark and Tyrann Mathieu.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they looked. They said, we got some dogs now, and watch how this is going to affect the team and the defense. And guess what? It did. That's why when people criticize the Frank Clark deal, well, you have to consider that as well. Because it was a plan to change the mentality of that defense. And Tyrann Mathieu, to change the mentality of that defense. And it did, and it worked, and they were different enough to where they won the Super Bowl. I had somebody around the team... And he wasn't just mimicking what the Chiefs did, because then it reminds me, this sounds like what they told me about the Chiefs a couple of years ago. He said, we needed some dogs. We needed some dudes in that locker room that didn't give up.
Yeah.
Any, you know, that he needed to have that mindset. And he said, the front four guys in the rotation are all like that now. And he said, hey, we had some nice arms. We had some guys with good stuff. You can think about who we're talking about here.
Yeah.
We had some guys with good stuff. But they weren't those kind of guys. They were too nice. They were too passive. And they didn't have any. And it was like everyone just kind of following each other. No one leading, right? But he told me, he's kind of laughing. He goes, Cole Reagans is a dog. Seth Lugo is a dog. Waka's like.
Reagans shows no emotion, good or bad. He just goes out there and just says, you can just see the focus.
And they said, Singer is a dog. And now they've had this mentality. And then you see
Singer's always been that way.
Right. He has, but it wasn't enough because he wasn't established enough.
Yeah.
And he wasn't a veteran. Right?
Right.
And now you look and see, like, they always show the video after starts.
I got three or four guys that are just like me. We're going to go out and do some damage.
But like, when the five starting pitchers get together after starts and they're all talking and hanging out together, it's like... I mean, I don't know. They look like a defensive backfield together. They've got that same mentality, and they're talking about the start. They're talking about what they just saw, that camaraderie that you have. And that's one of the reasons why they brought in Will Smith and Chris Stratton. He said this about three, because we needed some dogs. He goes, we got some dogs in there. And so it's different. There's a different mentality, and that's what you always talk about, what James Shields offered to the clubhouse, not just him going out there and pitching a whole bunch of innings, and giving the Royals a good, solid starting pitcher to build the rotation around, but he brought that red ass to the locker room, to the clubhouse. And so, what do you think of that? Someone tell me that. That makes a difference. You see that?
Yeah. These guys have been around. They know how to pitch. They know what it takes to win.
They're not backing down.
They're not going to back down. No. Against anybody.
I loved hearing that.
Yep.
Well, there's different kinds of dogs, too. You know, some dogs bark loud. Some are quiet. That bite hard, you know, and like you're talking about Reagans, he is, I think what is more typical a lot of times with pitching is he's steady. He's steady the whole time.
Yep.
One of the things that made James Shields interesting, and I think I see a little bit of a comparison to Brady Singer on this, James Shields was pitched pissed off.
Singer's a red ass.
You know, and I remember talking to, you know, people around the Royals are like, look, Shields... You wouldn't necessarily tell a lot of other guys to pitch that way because a lot of times when guys get amped up emotionally, they lose their command, they lose their focus. It can be a dangerous way to approach it. But Shields knew how to. He would get himself mad to pitch because he pitched better. He was more focused when he was angry. And I think that the one you tell me, Bob, this is just me watching and observing. One of the challenges I think that Brady Singer has had is channeling those emotions, because he's an amped up guy and a hyper competitor. Remember when he got all pissed during his college career because there was a rain delay that was going to cause him to come out of the game, and it seemed like
this guy was threatening the rain.
When things are going bad, those emotions, he seemed to have a difficult time controlling them into a positive way. And maybe that's part of maturing and growing up a little bit is keeping that edge, but knowing how to control that edge, that, you know, keep that fire controlled so that you don't let it spiral on you. Because it seemed like sometimes with him, if things went bad, it would snowball on him. Is that a fair way? Do you agree with that at all about his approach?
Yeah, I think so. I everybody's different.
Yeah,
you got to handle everybody different. Everybody's different in how they approach the game, what it takes to prepare for a game. So, yeah. But you got to have the guys who say, "No, you're not going to beat me. You're not going to beat me. No, I'm going to be in this game."
And one of the things that Shields really taught those guys was what you talked about earlier this year, Stephen, and I think it was, I can't remember, it was a Reagan start where you might not have your good stuff today, but you're going to get five innings. You're going to keep the team in when
he
this.
Gave up, he gave up 10 hits, only gave up three runs.
Three runs. Yeah. And we end up winning the ballgame.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, yes, those starts can get away from you. And it's, you know, hey, they very easily could have been five or six runs, and the Royals never come back and win that game.
He had some walks and 10 hits.
He gutted through it.
Yep.
I was very impressed by that. I feel like we're speaking your language about this stuff, and you won't engage. What have we done to you today? This is the kind of baseball you've been wanting.
There's enough voices in that room.
No, don't you like this? What we're seeing about these starting pitchers?
I love it.
These dogs, these attitudes. Don't you love red asses on the mound? You're a red ass producer. You know, Marco did a great job. Marco came in here and filled in wonderfully. We love Marco. Marco is one of the nicest young men that you will ever want. I say this many times.
Yeah.
If you have a daughter that's of age and she says, I'm going to date Marco, you should be very happy. Marco will treat her
but
very well,
Jake,
and be a gentleman.
The hell no.
But if I tried to needle Marco like I did yesterday with Jake and
Messi, Marco says,
you're right. Jake will fire back at me, get a little pissed.
Right.
You know?
But everyone does the job a different way. Yeah. This guy brings a bright red ass to this producership. He's here. Oh, maybe. That's right. And I feel like we're speaking your language here.
I love it. No, I mean, it's look, I didn't watch a whole lot of Royals baseball the last couple
Why
of
not?
Years. Well, because I didn't have to.
Right. Didn't you want to, though?
No, not really.
Guess what? We didn't either, and we had to.
I had to, which really hurt.
Right. But, I mean, it's all over. Like, Buster Olney's tweeting about the Royals. You know, MLB Network's tweeting about this. You know, they just had a tweet yesterday about this starting rotation. I mean, it's
I didn't see it.
I'll take a picture of it and send it to you.
What he says, I mean, how many times have you heard, like, Singer's on the mound, he's going to shove today. That's what Jake says whenever.
I never say that. You ever say that guy's just shoving?
No,
that's
never.
Right.
Well, that's what Jake does.
Stupid.
You don't have to say it.
It doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. That's point. Case in point.
Take this job and shove it.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's used in the proper terms. Yes, shove it.
Will you put a little action on Brady Singer for the afternoon game? It's an afternoon game. We can talk about this leading up right to it. You've got Singer on the mound. It gets a hapless offense. It's just like it's begging you to get right.
Yeah,
opportunity.
I'm still licking
my
wounds from UFC 300.
Well, who did you listen to?
Kevin Ioli.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
What did he miss on? Which one did he?
The Hill and the a couple other ones. That's all right. I love Kevin.
Do you like it when, during the NFL draft, they talk about quarterbacks spinning it? Do you like that? He can really spin it. Does that bother you?
I'm not a big fan of that.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to bother him.
No.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we will remind you where to buy tickets for the Boddick Foundation Ribbon Raffle.
Wrapping it up
tonight. Midnight?
Midnight.
Okay.
Last chance.
All right, your last chance. We'll take a break. Back after this on WHB. Mike Boddicker, the stage is yours. I know that Nate's in the middle of a long story, but the radio show continues on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Are we cutting into Matt's time? We don't want to cut into Matt Derrick's time. Right?
Matt Derrick, welcome to the show. No, he's not on?
Not yet.
All right.
Okay, we're good.
Matt will be here.
Okay.
I'm so confused by everything today.
It is. It's a strange
Jake won't speak to me.
Strange day. Strange day.
He tried to play a tribute by Lee Majors to Whitey Herzog.
Well,
that set me off.
It worked.
Everyone loved Whitey Herzog. We have Mike Boddicker right here. We have Corey Boddicker right here. Again, this is the last push, or as Jake would say, the last shove.
You got to shove it.
BoddickerFoundation.org. Tonight's the last night. You can buy tickets, $5 each. BoddickerFoundation.org. And then we pull the winners live stream on Monday with everybody that cares about you and the Boddicker Foundation.
That's right.
Will be
there.
In person at the studio taking part in this. You'll be able to tell.
I think that's why Nate broke his.
Who really cares?
Exactly.
All right.
So, yeah.
Mike Bodiger.
And Lezak, too. Lezak wouldn't come in.
You know, that's what an incredible attention whore, and he still won't come in here. Remember, he purposely showed up late.
I didn't know it was late.
Uh-huh. Now all eyes are on me. Let me interrupt this. Hey, okay, give everyone the particulars, both of you. Tell people the stage is yours. Go.
Well, I just wanted to say thanks to everybody in Kansas City and whoever bought tickets. It's been a really good push and run. And
it's pretty good liquor stores that helped you out.
Yes. A couple that I'd like to talk about real quick is Leawood Wine and Spirits. Cameron down there and John, they've helped us a ton. Kinsale, our good buddy, Gavin Barnby. Oh,
Gavin's a great guy.
Out in Olathe. And Corey's got his guys that he deals with.
Corey's
MDL.
A great guy.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. MDL, 95th and Antioch, Prairie, Party Time.
Just a lot of help from a lot of people. Because you can't come up with those kind of bottles and do what we do without a lot of help. And, you know, we got a lot of people run out and looking for liquor for us and trying to get us bottles and doing raffles. And we call them Lisa's posse, my wife's posse. They go out and try to find stuff. So it's kind of fun. But
you better not say no to Lisa when she asks for a donation.
Oh, no.
Watch yourself.
Yeah. And family members are out looking in Iowa and all over the place. Different, you know, just trying to help us out, trying to find bottles for this auction.
So, how many bottles we end up with?
52 different items to draw. I think there's 54 bottles.
Total bottles, yeah. 52 items, 54.
I'm getting tickets.
And let me tell you something. All kidding aside, Nate is heartbroken. He can't be there. So he, by the end of the show, he will purchase $1,000 in tickets to make up for his absence. $1,000.
Yeah, he's only making $20 to go to New York to call MLS
money.
Get tickets.
It'll have the smell of soccer balls on it, but who cares? It spends the same.
I'm getting tickets.
Children's Mercy will take it anyway.
Take all the money I'm making.
We're helping families. I just, you know, just want to say thank you because it's a process. It's an all year process, and a lot of people put a lot of time, especially my family, my daughters, my sons, and my wife. Really, I mean, this is like her 13th grandchild. She, it's her baby. She loves it, and she works so hard at it. And we raise a lot of money for a great cause, and that's what we do. That's the whole purpose of it. Taking care of these families, these kids who are going through cancer, Children's Mercy. It's just,
that's where all the money goes.
Every dime.
It's for the kids and the families.
Every damn dime.
When you talk to parents, and you've played some good videos about this, I've gotten to meet a lot of these parents because the Victory Project is supporting KC Treats.
There's so many they great help, things. Yeah.
Every week they honor a family that's dealing with this. And
that's
so
awesome.
I always go to training and I talk to the parents, and the human part of just being hit in the face with the worst news you could possibly get, that you have a child who's battling cancer, is bad enough. And then all of a sudden, when you're trying to deal with the emotional part of it, you get hit with
the bills.
All these bills. And it's not just the bills for the treatment. It's the bills a lot of times for families that are trying to come from small towns outside of Kansas City, and they've got to stay somewhere when they're in town. All the other different things that you don't even think about that pile up. The last thing you want is to end up in bankruptcy because you have a child that's got cancer. So this money will go to a great
cause.
Tell me the two most expensive bottles someone can win right now.
We have a 15-year Pappy Van Winkle, and one of our family friends picked up a Woodford Baccarat edition, which is,
what's that worth?
$2,000 MSRP.
Well, that Mr. Sam's.
And the Mr. Sam's?
In the cast.
Sam's?
Yeah. Great.
Go on, jump, Sam's!
Yeah, Total Wine.
Do it expeditiously.
Total Wine helped us get a Mr. Sam, which not many people know about that bottle, but it is a very limited edition, highly sought after. I haven't had it. Everybody I've talked to has tried it, said it's blows Pappy out of the water.
And part of the show for Monday, ladies and gentlemen, I have agreed to drink the Mr. Sam's during the stream on air.
Really?
For
the whole
thing? Yeah, absolutely. And so it should be a very lively stream for a hell of a raffle pull. Yeah. And Jamie Bluma will help me. And then
no doubt about
walk
that.
Home. Yeah. So it's going to be fantastic.
stumble and crawl home.
Driver Susan St. John, ladies and gentlemen. Listen to me. Bodegrafoundation.org. Go right now and buy your tickets. Yes. And midnight's a cutoff.
Midnight's a cutoff. And tune in on Monday because we have fun.
What time is that going to be?
We go on air at 6:30.
6:30.
And what's the best way to watch it? Bodegrafoundation.org or the Facebook? Or?
Yeah, we'll have a link posted on the website. Mm-hmm. And everyone who bought tickets will be getting an email with the link.
Yeah, and good friends over at DMI.
And they let you run the stream because of your, you know, right?
Yeah, he produces the whole thing.
You're everything.
The technical director.
Well, what's that say? What's that? Why? What's?
I just got an alert on my smartwatch, a new order from Nate Bucati.
Wasn't quite 1,000.
That's all right, though.
He's missing a digit.
That's all right, though. Yeah, I'm missing a zero there.
He's lucky he's not missing a digit. I did.
It's not a finger.
I did buy 20 tickets.
Right.
I already bought some tickets before, but now I bought 20
and
more.
Even more.
And he's not because, there, so you're just going to crumble up.
That's right. Because he said this time he'll actually pull my name. If he pulls my name, he'll actually give me the bottle instead of throwing it away.
If he wins, he wins.
And I'll hold him to it, Nick.
Are
you going to be there?
I have no chance of winning this time.
are you going to be there?
Yeah.
You're going to pull some names. You're going to pull some names. Be prepared to be on camera.
I mean, since Nate's not going to be there, I'm going to pick up the slack.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
Jake's going to be so mad if he pulls my name.
Hey, I said I'll announce your name. I don't know what he's going to do. I can't speak for him. You can't make him do nothing. All right, so there you go. Bodegrafoundation.org.
Yes, and thank you, everybody in Kansas City.
Final push or final shove, Jake. I get it.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to mention before? This is the last chance.
Thank you to guys for letting us come on.
No.
Chad and A-10 makes a big difference.
You better believe it does. Chad Boger's the man. Jake, well, what do we do now? Break, go right to Matt.
We got Matt Derrick on.
Matt Derrick, would you buy some raffle tickets for, what the hell just happened? That scared me. For the Boddicker Foundation Bourbon. Do you like bourbon, Matt Derrick?
You know, I haven't had bourbon in a long time.
Well, now's the time.
Use of bourbon, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I want to thank Mike and the whole Boddicker family because everything that you guys do with this is just absolutely fabulous. And I know yesterday when Jake and I were talking about this, and I said I had a doctor's appointment, so I needed to do it a different time. And he's like, "Oh, let me talk to Boddicker about moving it." And I'm like, "No, you can't do that." I mean,
you can't.
Boddicker for crying out
loud. No,
I was mortified.
I am so easy to change. I have no life.
He's very pleasant at all times. Yeah, if you listen to the show.
He embraces change, just like all the new rules in baseball.
Yeah, right.
He
loves it.
Yeah.
There's nothing more than Mike Boddicker likes than change.
Yeah.
And technology.
I like bills, too.
Right. Yeah. Mike Boddicker did want to know, what do you think about the glowing words that Andy Reid had to say about Kadarius Toney as Nate now is being forced to wrap his mind around a roster featuring KT next year?
Yeah, it's nothing new. I mean, it's what they've been saying behind the scenes about Kadarius since he got here. Even when he hasn't been playing, when he's been hurt, they're just like, hey, if he can get healthy and get right, he's going to be a great player for us. So nothing that they haven't said publicly and nothing that they haven't been saying, you know, continuously. So I still think unless something dramatic happens, he's going to find a way onto this roster this year.
So what did you take away about his comments? Because I think, look, we're dealing with the Rashee Rice stuff off the field, and we're speculating how it will affect things on the field with a possible suspension and everything else. But still, the most important thing as far as just the roster and the lineup is left tackle. And he was asked about Wanye Morris. Did you take anything away from his comments about Wanye Morris, the guy who, based on who's on the roster, he'd be the starter right now if they played a game today?
Yeah, you know, I think the thing that's interesting about Wanye is I think they still feel like he's in that category where the one thing that he needs around him is that he needs somebody to push him. And, you know, and there's a lot of times that, you know, they've wanted to be able for younger players, whether it's a rookie especially, but even sometimes second young players, they want to be pushed. They feel like they need that in order to just get better. And, you know, and we've heard it a lot from, you know, coaches and evaluators, you know, with Wanye that, hey, last year when he played, there was some good, there was some bad, there was some in the middle. And I think you could see that. I mean, he definitely had, you know, all three moments. I mean, he wasn't incredible. He wasn't terrible. I mean, he was solid. But you saw there was, you know, definitely room for some growth. And I think that's the one thing that I keep hearing is that they just want competition at that spot. But you know, Donovan Smith hasn't, you know, signed, and I think that's kind of one piece that's out there. Because if the Chiefs, hey, if they draft a left tackle of the future, then Donovan Smith's not going to want anything to do with Kansas City. He wants to play. So if the Chiefs draft a left tackle that's ready to play day one, I expect Donovan Smith's probably going to sign somewhere else. If the Chiefs don't draft a left tackle, reasonable chance that, you know, Donovan Smith probably comes back to Kansas City, and he's the guy that, you know, Wanya has to compete with and push. And I think the Chiefs would be fine with that. If Wanya has to work for another year to earn that spot, I think they feel like he would be a better player for it.
Okay, so one thing that I wanted to ask you about, look here. It's all guesswork, these mock drafts, right? But we do realize that Peter Schrager from NFL Network, he is tied in with the Chiefs.
Yes.
Right? And he was, and just because he had dinner with them doesn't mean you know who they're drafting, but he was spotted at dinner with Brett Veach at the Combine. And he has some good sources with the Chiefs. Did you see the latest mock draft that he had and who he had the Chiefs taking at 32?
I did see that. Yes.
Please tell people, reveal the name. And it wasn't just shocking because it was a name we heard with the Chiefs. It was shocking because it was a name we haven't heard linked to the first round. I've heard him more in the end of the second and third round. But tell me what you think of the player and what you think of this, because, I mean, he's just, you would imagine he heard this from someone, at least heard the Chiefs might be interested, because that would be a pretty bad look if he just threw a guy out there that ends up going in the third round.
Well, I mean, it still possibly goes in the third round.
Right.
But, Jalen Polk, Washington, I mean, all Washington receivers are really good. So, I mean, if your team ended up with one of those Washington receivers, you're fine. It's just where you get them. Yeah, Jalen Polk in the first round is a whole other ball game. I mean, yeah, there's most of the places that you'll see him have him as the second or third round pick. And that's not to mean that the media consensus is correct. I mean,
right.
There's plenty of times that the NFL front offices feel a whole lot different, but they're just not going to tell anybody. And that's the only caveat I have with this, is that I respect the heck out of, you know, Peter Schrager's game and how connected he is with Brett Veach, because he has gotten some scoops, and there's no doubt about that. But I'm also reconciling it with the other part of it, which is that there is no one, I think, that's more circumspect in the NFL about what he's going to do for the draft than Brett Veach. I mean, he absolutely, other than telegraphing maybe like a seventh-round pick, you know, or an undrafted guy. I mean, when he talked about, hey, there's going to be a 1,000-yard rusher in the seventh round and then gets Isaiah Pacheco. I mean, that's about it. So I almost feel like, hey, if one of two things, either Peter Schrager just really likes Jalen Polk, which he kind of alluded to in making the pick, that he likes him, and, hey, there are some people who really like Polk, and maybe he is going to go higher than people think. But I would imagine that if the Chiefs take him, I think it's probably more likely to get him in the second round. They trade up for him because the problem, maybe they won't get him at 64. I don't think they're going to take him at 32.
We'll trade back.
There's just no way I can imagine that Brett Veach's voice to anybody outside the war room, hey, we're interested in Jalen Polk. I mean, Brett Veach just does not telegraph things like that. So I feel like it's either just Peter Schrager on his own, knowing that the Chiefs are interested and throwing a name out there because he likes him, or that's just, you know, Brett Veach with misdirection. That's just not what he does. So I can't imagine in a million years the Chiefs taking Jalen Polk at 32, but hey, it could happen. I could end up with my face sewn to the carpet tomorrow.
It was just so out of left field. But it's so out of left field, like, wait a minute.
Right.
Wait a second.
He says here, Polk is a personal favorite, and I keep hearing his name from football people I trust. So
yeah, just because he's a personal favorite, you don't put him on your mock draft. Like,
yeah, yeah. And obviously he's got football people with the Chiefs that he trusts. Whether or not the Chiefs outsmarting everybody at cornerback makes me confident.
Or they're using him. And
A little smoke screen, something like that.
I mean, if this is a Brett Veach smoke screen to make everybody think that he's going wide receiver in the first round so he can move up and get a tackle or something, I mean, that makes perfect sense.
Or maybe to make him think he's going for a different wide receiver than he's really going for.
I mean, or to give us fresh content on the show. Maybe he's thinking, that, hey, the Border Patrol needs something else to talk about. Let me throw this guy out here.
Thanks, Veach.
Yeah.
Veach is always thinking. I love it.
The Chiefs had trouble with that last year because, I mean, they couldn't make a deal with Dallas for a first-round pick because Dallas was afraid they were going to take their guy. So maybe this is just a way of Brett Veach trying to throw off the scent about who they're interested in so that they can get a deal done if they want to.
That's got to be frustrating for Veach at this point because I would think the teams are afraid to trade with the Chiefs for draft pick, trade draft picks with the Chiefs in the first place just because look what's happened in the years that he's done it. I mean, I know he wasn't the GM when they traded up for Mahomes, but all the reports are that he was very involved in
like,
that.
Like, but especially like right now where Buffalo is, Buffalo's like, these trade in front of us and take them.
Yeah. So he's...
But it's all NFC teams, so what do they care?
Right.
Like right in that area.
Right. That's the thing, is that, I mean, it seems as though it's been more of the AFC teams that have been wanting to avoid the Chiefs. And, you know, and when there have been some NFC teams like Dallas last year, I think it was the one in particular that it seemed like that didn't want to trade with the Chiefs because they thought the Chiefs were going to take the player they wanted. So, yeah, I mean, I think that stretch of NFC teams right before Buffalo is a prime opportunity. And, you know, that third round pick from Tennessee the Chiefs got for Legarius Sneed. That and your 32 should get you 23, 24, 25, somewhere in there easily.
Well, hello there, left tackle. Final question for you. Will you watch the spinoff of Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader that will be hosted by Travis Kelce? Travis Kelce will be hosting Are You Smarter Than a Celebrity, which will be streaming on Amazon Prime. Is that something that you will tune in on? Are You Smarter Than a Celebrity, hosted by Travis Kelce, Matt Derrick?
I think we're going to have to tune into that one. Although, I always get nervous about these celebrity shows because, you know what? Sometimes the definition of a celebrity or star gets really, really, you know, stretched.
$100,000 prize. It will feature a contestant trying to win the prize by answering 11 questions on a range of subjects pulled from an elementary school curriculum. There will be a classroom full of celebrities who can help the contestant, but toward the end of the game, only one of them will be able to help answer the final question, which will come from the sixth grade curriculum. Nate Bucati.
Well, you know, just because Travis Kelce's hosting it, I think I'm interested. I also
I would not watch it otherwise.
I listened to the first portion of the New Heights podcast that just got dropped this morning. This while I was getting ready for work, and they also were announcing, which you already know about, but they announced publicly the launching of the Travis Kelce Patrick Mahomes restaurant that's going to open up at the Lowe's. And Travis didn't seem to know anything about what might be on the menu.
Right. That's right.
But he says it's going to be really good. So
yeah, sure. Yeah, Travis. Sure it will be. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
It's probably best he leave that to other people.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Well, you want to have, you don't want to micromanage. Yeah.
He is the greatest tight end of all time. I don't know if he could set a menu properly, though.
But I don't know that he can't.
Right.
So.
You know, Nick Jacobs and I were talking about this on our YouTube stream last night, and I want to just reiterate it here. I mean, Travis, with his star quality now, for the opening of that steak restaurant, I mean, they absolutely need to get Nick Offerman from Parks and Rec as Ron Swanson to be there in person for the opening.
Absolutely.
You know, but you make this point. That thing, think about, because, you know, they're going to, he's gonna have to be there every now and again just, you know, to promote it or whatever, between him and Mahomes. That thing, you know what kind of business that thing's going to do?
Oh, yeah.
I think people need to be prepared to bring their checkbook.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's going to be, this is not going to be a cheap meal. It's at the Lowe's Hotel. It's going to be, it's going to be a nice.
Well, you saying, you don't think X Factor is going to be? Money. What?
I don't
Chiefs
know.
Super fans? The X Factor and.
I'm
well,
just,
I know Chiefsaholic won't be there. He'd love to be there.
He might have to rob a bank to be able to afford it.
He can afford it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like this is going to be an upscale. It sounds like this is going to be a pretty. I mean, it's at the Lowe's
Hotel. What
the
hell is that supposed to mean?
I'm just saying it's going to be expensive.
What are you saying?
It's going to be an expensive restaurant.
We get it, Nate. You try to keep people out already? Gatekeeper over
I'm
here?
I'm not trying to gatekeep anything.
Are you listening to this, Matt? He's gatekeeper Nate over here. Trying to keep Cheese Kingdom out of there.
There might be some fans that show up there ready to, you know, have a nice meal, and then they take a look at the menu and go, I might have the appetizer.
How much can I get for one rib?
Yeah. Oh, the sides are a la carte? What?
Matt, Derek, we'll have a Border Patrol dinner there. How about that, Matt, Derek? And you're invited.
I'll sign up for that.
Nate's paying.
I'll pay. It's nothing to me.
Right. MLS money.
I'm just interested to see what, you know, leftover trophies that they don't care about that they're going to put in the restaurant.
Right. That's right. I mean, you know, if I told you I wasn't going to be there, I'd be lying. I'll go.
Right.
You know? I mean, just, hey.
We'll just split some apps, you
know? That's right. Matt, Derek, a pleasure to talk to you as always.
Pleasure to talk with you as well. Appreciate you guys. And appreciate Mike Boddicker because that guy is the best dude in the world.
Yeah, he MF'd you walking out the door. You didn't hear that, but that's fine. We'll smooth things over at a later date. That's Matt Derek from ChiefsDigest.com. We'll be right back after this on WHB.